Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Sandick here for another Locked On Wizards podcast. A little different situation going on tonight. Of course, the Wizards just fell to the Milwaukee Bucks at home. Typically, obviously, we do a podcast after the show. Because it was a late one, ended up doing a pregame podcast, as it were, with Todd Dybas, where we talked about kind of the current state of the Wizards, and also we mostly got into potential trade ideas that we've had. What players the Wizards could potentially target, and also sort of the reality of what the Wizards can or can't do. So that'll be the bulk of the podcast. But I'm going to play for you guys up the top here some audio from John Wall postgame talking about the loss. The Wizards had a three-point lead with 3 minutes to go, but too much Giannis Antetokounmpo late. Wizards had another rough fourth quarter shooting after they had a similar one against Memphis. So he talked about that, talked about Giannis, and also Matthew Dellavedova got thrown out of the game for clotheslining Bradley Beal on a play. Wall talked about that, had some really harsh comments on Dellavedova. So I'll play that for you in just a second. Then after Wall, this goes straight into the podcast as if I had done it originally with Todd Dybas. So that'll be that. Wizards fall to the Bucks, but they're off until Wednesday when they face the Utah Jazz. All right, so here we go. We'll get to some John Wall, and then the usual podcast that you're used to. Here we go.
I think we competed. I think down the stretch, I mean, they made some, you give them credit. Giannis made two shots, Bled made the three. But then I think they got a couple calls that got them into the bonus and got them into a rhythm. But other than that, they made bigger shots than what we did. I think the couple calls they got changed the momentum of the game, like the last 3 minutes.
John, when you see what Dellavedova did, how much is you instantly recognizing who did that and thinking about what's gone on in the past with him, or how much is it just
whatever
the game that's what happened?
Whatever their team can say and other people can vouch for him, to me, I always thought he's just a dirty player. I give him credit, he plays hard. I take nothing away from him with that, but I just feel like he's a dirty player. Like a guy going full speed, don't grab him by his shoulders. I mean, grab him by his waist or whatever else. Whatever they had to do, and they got him out of there, and then continue to play basketball, and they end up with a better win than us.
John, it looked like a few minutes before that, you and Dellavedova had some words for each other. Well, I think Giannis was at the free throw line, and Jody kind of walked in between you guys. Was there any kind of build up before what?
I want no build up. It was just a call they had just made, and he was like, "Y'all getting calls." I was like, "Y'all, you not doing a hand checking all the time, like." They're not calling that for us, you know what I mean? Like, they're getting their calls, whatever, blah, 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 but stop talking to me. You're not my guy, you're not my buddy on the court, so you don't have no reason to conversate.
John, how frustrating is it to have some of these calls or lack of calls, and what do you guys have to do to stay focused?
Well, I mean, other than that, I mean, I'm not saying that's the reason why we lost. The opportunity to win the game, don't let what the refs call, the reason why we lost, they made bigger shots. I mean, when it was a tie ball game, we're down one, they made bigger shots. But yeah, we used to it by now. I mean, I pay no mind to it. I mean, I had four free throws in the first half, then I finally got two more at the end of the game. Like, I'm not a person that shoot all jump shots. I'm a person that attacks the basket. But every time I always ask them, what's the difference from this call and that call? They always give me an excuse. I'm not here for excuses. I didn't sign up to compete and give my all for excuses, so they can say that for themselves.
John, what do you think the line is between
the rest of aggressive, I mean, I play aggressive. I think, I mean, guys play aggressive. I mean, it's a difference, though. You know, that's not the type of play that you do and then just stand there like nothing happened. If we do that to somebody, their team is going to react the same exact way. And he's known for undercutting guys, trying to box him out, you know, mean, stuff like that. I give no credit for that. I give credit for him for being a hard player that's hard-nosed and one of the old-school type players that played very physical. I give him credit for that. But when it comes to doing dirty plays, I have no respect for it.
So it's endangering someone.
Yeah, like, come on, man. He could have got a concussion. He's going full speed. You snatch him back. You get his head on the floor, and then he got a concussion. That was something different.
The two fourth quarter finishes last night, you guys couldn't make some shots, and today also, again, you couldn't make it correlation or just something that
missed? We had a couple good looks. We just missed them. But, the other teams put the pressure on us defensively. We making the right plays and right reads. You got to be able to knock down shots. And sometimes shots not going to fall. When they're not, you got to be able to get defensive stops. And that's what we brought ourselves on tonight. They made the bigger plays.
All right. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing here along with the guy I'm usually with at We're at the Verizon Center, Capital One Arena. I guess, you know, I'm just straight calling it Verizon Center. I'm not going to bother even switching the names. I think I've said this before. Same thing with CSN. I'm not bothering to change the names. So anyway, here at the arena where the Wizards are playing, Todd Dybvis from the Washington Times is with me. We are talking before the Wizards are playing the Milwaukee Bucks. And if you're wondering why we're doing that, it's largely because it's not my fault they're starting at 8 o'clock at night on a Saturday. And I don't necessarily, feel like we need to do a podcast at midnight. So we're going to talk before the game. We'll talk a little bit about what happened with the Memphis game. We're going to go down Todd's trade talk ideas and a couple other topics of Wizards note to get into. We'll just hope there's nothing serious happens in this game. They're playing the Bucks. It'll be an interesting matchup. So we'll maybe talk about what we want to see in advance of that. Anyway, you can find all the podcasts on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Standig. Todd is at Todd _ Dybvis. So by the time you hear people hear this, the Memphis game will have been over 24 hours. My only question to you would be this. The rule on this podcast has been we're not saying they're in a turnaround. They've officially turned around until we see it for a few games. So close. So close, right? I mean, they're up 17 points like a minute to go in the third quarter. They finish that game off, even if they win by eight, whatever it is. Okay, you'd have to feel at that point like they've turned it around. I still don't think it was like I didn't view the last night as like, oh boy, here they go again against a bad 500 team or a team that's way under 500 as a letdown because they did a really good job for most of it. That said, it gets all the way down to one and the starters were in there for the last 8 minutes of the fourth quarter. So it's hard to be like, well, it's all good. But, I'm sticking with the ban. We're not calling it a turnaround. Quite yet. Would you agree with that? Or do you think, come on, at this point, they've now, they're 9-3 since Wall's been back. They've won four in a row. You know, get off my high horse. Where would you go on that one?
Well, part of the three is the Atlanta game. Since he's been back. And what's the other disaster I'm forgetting that was part of the three since he's been back?
Well, the
Brooklyn.
The at second Brooklyn? Yes, the second Brooklyn game.
Yeah, 119-84.
Right.
Yeah. Hello. And then last night, 15 points in the fourth quarter as they tried to give it away again against Memphis.
Right. Oh no, the two games against Memphis only because Memphis is just a shell of their normal team. Did the Wizards win either of those games? But like I said, look, for most of the game. Well, here's the other thing. I guess I would say. I mean, Wall and Beal did a lot last night for sure. And Markieff Morris, to me, that's the biggest thing. If you force me to say, do I see it? Is this a turnaround? I would point to Markieff Morris in the sense of three games in a row, he's gotten at least 10 rebounds. First time in his career, he's done that. So that's, he can't revert to averaging four rebounds a game as he was right before this surge. But if he's looking better, clearly. So if that's real, which it looks like, I guess it is, at least just in terms of how he feels, then I would feel, okay, we could probably say this is a turnaround because the bench has still largely been pretty good. Wall obviously looks healthy. That hurdle over two rows of people was crazy. So from that perspective, I would, if you make me say it, yes. But since I run this podcast, I will not say it. We're not 100% of the turnaround. Let's see if they finish strong here against Milwaukee and this starts a five-game homestand. You know, I can easily say, imagine during this stretch, say, they're good.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. It's just, you don't want to see the waffling in the fourth quarter on the front end of a back-to-back. You want to see them get that over with so everybody sits down. And then when you get in super late Saturday morning, you whatever benefit you could derive from saving yourself 5 minutes on the floor, you would have wanted to accomplish that. Instead, Wall and Beal play 36 and 38 minutes respectively. They probably got to bed at I was just talking to someone on the staff who said he lives near Dulles, and he got to bed at like 4:15. So those guys had to come all the way back in, at least almost all the way back in Beal's case. And so God knows when they got to bed. And tonight you deal with Giannis. So every minute counts when you're in that situation. And it's also just these kind of these signs of high-end professionalism, right? You don't feel like the Spurs would do something like that. They would get it over with and move on.
Well, and this goes back to not to bring
that
up this
kind of team.
Not to bring this back in, but like if they had not had all the other crazy losses,
on the road against any NBA team, these things happen, and you take the road win and you move on. It's just because they've also lost to Atlanta. They were by 8,000 to Utah, the Brooklyn games, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why it's more than just, well, they sort of looked lethargic, or they just didn't, maybe not lethargic, they just didn't make plays.
They just wobbled to the end.
Yeah, they weren't making shots. So that's the only reason for the concern. I didn't think it was as dramatic of a letdown as I've had some other games. That said, they were really, really close to blowing it against a team that's not good at all. At the moment we're talking, we don't know yet if Otto Porter is going to play. He had a hip injury. I would going to guess, a total guess, that he won't, just because it just happened like within 24 hours. So, you know, if it's bad enough to keep him out, you would, you know, but who knows? We'll see. This is one of those games where the lack of a true backup, a third small forward, as it were, it comes into play, because you know, if Oubre starts, would be my assumption. Although it's interesting, he didn't play in the fourth quarter either last night. He played some, but basically Brooks was going with Satoransky at the three, which was interesting. But assuming Oubre starts, the question is, well, then who's the backup three? Again, I go back to the whole, there's literally nobody at the end of the bench, especially now that McCullough's not even here. Or at least he's not here as far as we know. They didn't bring him back. So that'll be interesting to see. So with Giannis, obviously, that's why it's interesting, because you want, you know, you need bodies going up against him. Oubre will be an interesting matchup with his length and all that, but at the same point, they just don't have as many guys. By the way, do you think Oubre, I mean, obviously we talk about his length, that's his thing. Mm-hmm. He looks at himself. Do you think he looks at Giannis? He's like, oh my God. Like, what the hell?
I was just going to say, Oubre has length, but Giannis's length is just clown show length. It's just like you took, what was the stretchy toy thing? Stretch Armstrong.
Sure.
Remember that thing?
Well, I always think of the Inspector Gadget thing, but yeah, Stretch Armstrong.
Stretch Armstrong. You just grab it and pull it out. It's like that's when Giannis was made. Someone just grabbed him by the middle and then pulled each limb as far as it would go and then let him grow up. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, since we don't really have much to say about this Milwaukee game, other than, look, the Bucks are also on a back-to-back, so at least the Wizards get that benefit that the other team is dealing with the same thing, and they lost, so take that, whatever that, they got smoked at home. I don't know if that...
I thought you were going to say take that for data for a second.
Oh, probably. Seeing as how the Wizards just played Memphis, it would have been appropriate to have gone there. Before, sort of to lead into your trade thought, I mentioned Satoransky. I wrote something yesterday for FanRag Sports in which I talked to Satoransky the other day about him playing overseas with Porzingis, and I wrote a little bit about that. But what I tied it into was, and I'm curious what you think, for all the talk about what are the Wizards going to do at the trading deadline, they could make the huge move, the Boogie Cousins type thing, seems unlikely, or they could make the Bogdanovich thing, which is sort of a half measure, or they could just make a minor-y kind of thing, the Brandon Jennings or, you know, a second round pick for a player X. But it seems like if you look at their team, that the backup guards is where the bigger potential for upside or adding something better comes into play. But if Satoransky over this next month, if they believe he can truly be a third guard, i.e. a guy that you can use late in games, as Brooks did last night, on the court with Wall and Beal, or even just with one of them, if it came to that, could you justify that you don't actually have to do really much of anything? That's what I wonder, because ultimately in the playoffs, they shrink their rotation, and we already know Oubre is going to play. Assuming Mike Scott doesn't hit a wall, he's going to keep playing. Assuming that, you know, I mean, Mahimi's going to play some. So you kind of only have one guard spot on some level. And is it right now it would have to be Satoransky. So anyway, my question is, do you think that Satoransky, how he does over this next month, is going to potentially dictate whether the Wizards do anything, or should it dictate anything?
I don't think it's going to have much influence, because he's still going to be here regardless. So I think it's more of a kind of going forward with him. Certainly with the open roster spots and Jody Meek's play this season, you need to do something there just to, just to be viable, even for the body, you have to do something. So at a minimum, there has to be someone who shows up there, even if you think, and I don't like, we've gone over this a million times, I don't like Satoransky as the small forward.
Even though his
three-point shooting appears to be reached a point where we have a sample that it's pretty viable this year, much better than last year, right? But I don't like him there. The team's not, the best situation for the team is not to have him there. It's to make him the backup point guard. Brandon Jennings played 13.7 minutes per game in the postseason last year. So those should be Satoransky's 14, 15 minutes.
So the
playoffs come and you need to do something in the shooting guard spot and even another wing type guy.
But last year Jennings was basically the only guard that played though, right? I'm saying if there's only a third guard, mm-hmm. of those 13 minutes, the minutes that drive this the most crazy was the ones he played with Wall.
Right.
Now,
yes.
Satoransky is a better shooter, and because of his size, it gives you some other options defensively. But he would still have to play with Wall, which is not ideal. So this is sort of my thing of, can he just... I mean, it may only be 5 minutes he plays with Wall, but in the playoffs, 2 minutes can change an entire game.
Right.
It's a much different deal. So can they do they
like think, 2 minutes of the last 2 minutes of the third quarter in game 7, for example, would have a large influence on the outcome.
Right. So basically, I think for me, it sort of comes down to, do the Wizards think that even if it's just 5 minutes a game that he would have to play with Wall as off the ball, can he do that? If they think he can, and even though I didn't love it, the fact that Scott Brooks felt comfortable enough using him for the last 6, 7, 8 minutes of that, he played the whole fourth quarter, mm-hmm. but I mean, he didn't take him out, is interesting. And if, I don't think Satoransky defensively he was pretty interesting. I don't offensively he didn't do much. But if they think he can be that guy, then I don't know if they like. We're going to talk about some trade ideas, but it's a difference between, well, do we have to go and make the bigger move, or can we just, okay, we maybe need another guard, because again, right now the last three spots are kind of empty. But like, do you go out and just wait? Well, let's wait and see who gets cut.
We're not even at the midpoint of the season, so you're going to need another viable body in the rotation at some point, hopefully one that's more productive than Jody Meeks. One of the nicest people you ever meet. I feel like I'm obligated to say that, but he hasn't played well this year.
No, he hasn't. I mean, Frazier still exists too. Frazier would be a much better player than anything they had a year ago at that third guard spot. But anyway... That to me, I think, is the most interesting part. If Satoransky, if they think, look, he's been good and we'd like him as the backup too, but really I don't think we can trust him as the third guard, then I think they have more, there's more impetus to do something. If they think he can do something, and he is shooting 41% from three, not a ton of attempts, mm-hmm. but he's making some shots. If they think he could be that guy, then I don't know if they feel as desperate to go out and do whatever. That would be the only thing I would say I'm sort of looking at here. I mean, and I know people are probably going, dude, what about Jan Mahimi? What about the center spot? Jan Mahimi's net rating since Thanksgiving is by far the best on the team. And again, they're not getting rid of that contract. They're probably not trading Gortat. So that's where they're at. And look, Mahimi's actually not been terrible. He's just not worth $16 million. We can't deal with that. He's not been bad.
Can't change that.
Right. The front court is not the issue right now. Plus, I mean, whatever, Jason Smith still exists. So, like, I don't think they have to do anything to the front court, barring injuries. They could get another swingman. So in these situations, if the Otto Porter is out, you have somebody else to use. But anyway, so that for me is sort of what I think is interesting the last few weeks here.
I would say the primary purpose for Satoransky from here to the end is to get John off the floor as much as possible. Just keep playing well. Try to keep John's minutes down, something they couldn't do at all last year, and make it to the finish line and be a viable option as a backup point guard to play 12 minutes to 14 minutes in the playoffs, depending on who you're facing, obviously. But far and away to me, having a shooting guard, a new shooting guard, instead of replace Jody Meeks would be your biggest gain out of anyone. We talk a lot about, I don't want to say Boogie, but like DeAndre Jordan, or take the DeAndre Jordan scenarios of, so you get an upgrade at center, right? But then you would probably have to move Porter to get him, and this is just I'm in no way advocating for any of this, just saying in general terms. And so you take a step back there. If Oubre replaces Porter, he, you know, I know this may be hard for some people to fathom, but he's not as good. So what is your total outcome from those moves, right? And so in the case of replacing Jody Meeks with even a replacement level player, let alone someone who's slightly above, how much that's your biggest margin that you can go quickly from we're way back here to, oh, this is much better and much more serviceable and theoretically making life easier for Mike Scott and theoretically making life easier for Satoransky and the entire second unit. And then we can even get hopefully less focused on Jan Mahimi's offense. This is to bring a baseball analogy into this. When I used to cover the Seattle Mariners, Brendan Ryan was their shortstop. He's awesome in the field, maybe the best defensive shortstop I've ever seen in person. He was unbelievable, some of the stuff he did. But he hit ninth. He couldn't hit a lick. And their offense as a whole stunk, right? They were always like last in runs, and everyone groused about Brendan Ryan's offense. I'm like, well, Brendan Ryan's offense is not going to make or break you. You know, he's not the cleanup hitter. Your cleanup hitter sucks. That's the problem. Your number three guy sucks. Your number five guy stinks. So forget about Brendan Ryan's offense. And on any other team that had a viable, you know, one through six, then you could keep him out there because he's actually a net win because his defense is so good, right? So this is kind of the same concept with Mahimi of, yes, aesthetically is troubling, and the math around his offense equally troubling. I get it. I'm not saying that it's not. However, he's here to play pick and roll defense. He's here to switch on smaller guys, which obviously Scott Brooks prefers him versus the smaller guys instead of Gortat when they have to pick a center to be out there because their roster is constructed incorrectly, which again, we can't change that right now because no one's going to be like, I want to construct my roster incorrectly and here's some better players for your albatross. Right. It's just not going to happen. So to me, yeah, it's that backup shooting guard spot and both of those things will influence Wall and Beal throughout the rest of the season. I'd also say do it sooner rather than later. Don't wait till the first week of February. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have some options too by the time the playoffs roll around to determine, like you said, who that guard is going to be.
So, yeah, I think February 8th is the deadline. So let's go through some names here. We on the side are always, it's easy to make fun of people who always come with trade ideas. We all do it. It's just a matter of to the degree that we all do it. Like, you know, you're keeping reality in check. You know, you're going to be able to trade Jody Meeks to get Giannis? Probably not. You know, things like that.
Do you understand that the salaries have to match?
We could start there. Things along those lines. Because they were playing Memphis, I've mentioned that Tyreke Evans is the type of player who's expiring contract, veteran, power guard. His 3-point shooting is a career high right now.
Back to back years, it's been good.
Yeah,
which is strange because he's been bad at it historically.
Yeah. And he can get his own offense. So even if you take the other guys off the wall, the Beal and Otto off the court, mm-hmm. and you put him in there, you can throw the ball to him and he'll get his. That's something the second unit does not have right now. So he's the type of guy that hypothetically would be, if the Wizards really want to make some kind of a move, they could get. The question, of course, is, well, what's the cost? Is it going to be like Bogdanovich where – now, the Bogdanovich thing, I guess that is the question, right? If you didn't deal with Nicholson's contract, what would you actually have had to give up to get Bogdanovich? Probably wouldn't have been a first.
Probably dial that back to a second.
So then that becomes – so there's that aspect of it. Now, there's also the aspect of, for any of these things, the salary cap / tax part of it mm-hmm. all. We can make the money work, but ultimately the Wizards would probably have to another team is not going to want to take on more money.
Right.
So
so that means two things, that Meeks and Jason Smith are off the table in any of these discussions because they both hold player options for next year.
For anybody with an expiring contract.
Yes. So nobody is going to take either of those guys because they're just going to exercise their option to stick wherever they end up.
Unless the Wizards give up a first round pick, correct. Which this goes back to my Satoransky point. Unless they are in a absolute, like, oh, my God, this is like last year, the bench is horrible. I just think at some point, even if you screw yourself a little bit this year, you have to at some point build towards the future. That they're going to have no money, you know, they're not going to have really any money next year to play with.
And they already don't have their 2019 second-round pick because that was part of the cost of Oubre.
Right. So I would prefer them to not trade at least the first. The second, you know, I guess, whatever. At this point, they're just not even bothering.
If it's next summer, second, yes. A shrug for me. Go do whatever you want with that.
Right.
So specific to Tyreek, like the math works if it's a second Tim Frazier and McCullough, because that will match Tyreek's bargain basement deal that he ended up with this year. He's also interesting because he's so high usage that I groan when I watch him play. But I think with this second unit, like Mahimi obviously doesn't need the ball. Satoransky's more than willing to pass the ball. Mike Scott's also a willing passer, but he would need to still get some shots in that scenario. So if you are putting a high usage shooting guard in with those guys, I think it fits is because of the personnel. So that would be my concern is like how much overlap Tyreek Evans could have with Wall Beal and company. However, you would try to massage that in there from time to time because he is so high usage. I don't think that would work very well. But as far as, hey, this guy's going to take the most shots on the second group. Mike Scott's going to take the second most. And then whatever happens after that is whatever. That would be a much better situation than they're in now.
The only thing I guess I wonder with him, to your point of usage, is, you know, it's one thing to imagine him with just the second unit, but when he's with Beal and Wall, then what happens? Because that's sort of what I'm saying about the playoffs.
And who's he taking off the floor to be there? Is it Otto or Oubre? And
even if he's just in there with Wall or Beal, now what? Obviously, you want the ball in their hands. I mean, Tyreek Evans can do stuff, but if he's doing stuff now, Beal's getting five shots less a game or whatever. You know, all of a sudden, then that's not as interesting.
I would say that just specific to that point, maybe Beal's efficiency goes up if his minutes go down, even by two or three, you know, and he's able to manage things differently as he goes along. And Tyreek Evans may enable that on occasion. So I would put that as part of the consideration of Satoransky and whoever you acquire, how much can they benefit Beal and Wall from now until the end of the season.
I mean, one thing I would think if Evans, let's just say that deal happens, I suspect Satoransky barely plays, right? Because I mean, if Wall and Beal are going to average like 38 minutes a game, right? So if they're both playing about 38 minutes a game, that leaves about 20. Well, if you get Tyreek Evans, you're probably going to give him 20. I mean, 20 would be almost low for my perception of what a guy like that would be insane, but probably some of the other guys we're talking about. So at that point, Satoransky's not getting more than
in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, right. And I know we have got 40 more. That's the second half of the season to go. I'm not discounting that. I'm just looking ahead to that. That's what any of these moves would have to be about. That if it's about them just making the playoffs, then it's all gone crazy.
I think for me, I'm putting a significant amount of weight on how much can you come up with a decent guy to help spell Wall and Beal, get them to the finish line, and improve your seed as you go along. I think those two things would be huge for them in the playoffs, no matter what the rotation ends up being with the extra guard behind them.
Yeah, and it's certainly...
If you have a better player as an option as the possible extra guard instead of Jody Meeks, all the better in case somebody, you know, who knows what Boston's going to do with Marcus Smart and Rozier and Kyrie, you know, when they go ultra small and ultra loony, what do you have to counter that?
And also, I mean, if you did have a guy like Tyreek Evans, who's a big guard, you could hypothetically go with him, Wall, Beal, Otto, Markieff, and, you know, take Oubre out or whatever. So, sure. It gives you some of that option as well. That said, by the way, if I'm Memphis and you're calling up with McCullough, Frazier in a second, which would be probably one of the last eight picks in the second round or something like that, I'm going, okay, cool. Let me call the other 29 teams and see what I can do that's better. Because the two players are irrelevant. They both have expiring deals.
Right.
And the second is to pick. It's not nothing, but you would think that somebody else could probably beat that one way or the other. All right, we got other players you like talking about. Who else?
I think it's similar. It's kind of similar circumstance for Bellinelli, who's obviously just more of a straight-up shooter, the king of the leg kick during the jump shot. Always. So for me, on a personal level, it would be hilarious to watch him for a half a season, like hilarious in the way of joyful because of all his tricks. and how annoying they must be for every defender he's ever dealt with in all his histrionics and the whole package I find amusing. And he's playing pretty well this year. Again, this is strictly a direct upgrade over Jody Meeks is the point. Although, you know, and probably he's more likely to arrive at that price of a second and, you know, two dudes who match the money with expiring deals than Tyreek Evans is. So it would be better, not ideal, but better. Obviously, he's much different than Tyreek frame-wise, handling the ball, and just kind of how he's able to move. I mean, he's a two, and that's what he is, period.
What if I told you that either of these scenarios with Memphis for Evans or Atlanta with Bellinelli, they come back and say, okay, look, obviously the players are, you know, flat Sam or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but we'll do it, but you got to give us another second. So we understand that your 2019 is gone. Okay. Give us. Oh, by the way, they also traded the Trey Burke second round pick. That's gone. Right. What was that? 2021. I remember the trade was Trey Burke for an eighth grader. So I think it was something like that. There is also, I will say, there is also Aaron White still floating out there. The rights to him. Now, not to say that somebody would necessarily think that he's a player. I don't know, but the point would be, it's an asset to have, and somebody might be like, okay, give us that asset. You know, just to
2021 second rounder for Burke.
Right. So okay.
So the 19's gone and the 21's gone.
Right. Okay. So somebody says
so you have 18 and 20.
Okay. So
and 22.
So somebody says, okay, we'll do that, but you're gonna give us the 18 and the 20.
It doesn't bother me because you have paid the guys you're gonna pay, and they're not going anywhere during that time period. So you don't. Your number of generally, you have to increase. It's great to increase the number of flyers that you can take on someone, right? This is the Jordan Clarkson thing all over again. To your point, there's nothing that indicated that the Wizards would have picked Jordan Clarkson with that pick, but the fact that they didn't have a pick, you know what your chances of picking Jordan Clarkson are? Zero. So just yes. Basic math. Just. You know, you want to increase your odds as much as possible.
The fact that the two-way thing is now a thing, and, you know, as we heard the owner speak here a couple weeks ago, that it could be, you know, there could be the expansion of the G League here, you know, well, I don't know if it's a year or five, but, you know, the fact that there's two-way guys, like, it feels like, I mean, Devin Robinson not picked essentially is a draft pick for them at this point. So
yep.
That's one reason I could get around justifying trading multiple seconds. But yeah, I mean, look, if it's multiple seconds and this is going to, I think, help me get to the Eastern Conference Finals or beyond, I'm going to make that move. I would just prefer them not to deal.
I would agree, especially since, you know, I think you have a window to recover from whatever that second would be. You know, who knows, in the summer, if you do something major, you get someone to pile one in on the back end and you get it back type of situation. Because they're not going to have money. They're not, if Tyreek Evans plays well, they're not going to have the money to pay him. One of the other people that we've talked about on occasion, I brought up, is Rodney Hood, who would be a significant probably cost too, but you're not going to be able to pay him in the summer. So he's strictly a rental, and what are you going to give up for that? So none of these guys would be anticipated to be back. We are renting here, but again, trying to go make that dramatic swing from the negative numbers that Meeks has provided to someone who's halfway decent.
Gotcha.
Especially right. Former starters who are playing against backups now. That's a good scenario.
Yeah, and I all these guys would be interesting and fun, and it would be helpful. Whether the Wizards any of these packages were coming up with would be my only question. I just can imagine some other team getting desperate enough to say, all right, screw it, we'll give you the one, you know, we'll do that type of thing.
In the market is not on the Wizards' side. If you go through the rosters of the teams that are presumably going to be sellers, there's not a lot of options out there, especially considering the salary math that the Wizards are – complicates everything for the Wizards now and for the next at least three seasons.
And all right, so good thoughts there. I will just end with this. For those of you who've noticed that Andrew Bogut is getting released,
no.
It's zero. It makes 0% zero sense for either side. The Wizards have enough centers who can't play outside of 5 feet
and are already over 30 years old.
Right, and because of they already have a guy, so Bogut can find other places to play if that's what he wants. So that's that one makes zero sense unless you can tell me how they're trading Gortat or Mahimi, which is obviously seems unlikely. All right. Well, hey, well, let's just fingers crossed. Nothing crazy happens with the Wizards outside of a result. But beyond that, if there is, I'm going to blow up this podcast and make Todd come on after the game. But we'll hope for the best. Thank you guys for listening as always. Until next time. See ya.
Everybody gets the deal. Gets open for three. Dagger!
Home run. Home run shot. Dagger!